This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. The book is titled Return to Life. But to get the full flavor, you probably need to hear the subheading too. So the full title then, Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. It's written by a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, who spent much of the last decade and a half traveling the globe interviewing children who claim to have memories of a previous life. Some of these kids are as young as age 2, seldom are they much older than 5 or 6, and the stories can be quite extraordinary. A toddler having nightmares of dying in a plane crash, a 5-year-old reciting life details of a Hollywood extra, countless cases, in fact, that are hard to explain in any normal way. Although just what is normal is something author Jim Tucker is inviting us to question too, so question we will when this University of Virginia-based researcher is our guest. Right after the news.
Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The subject of reincarnation is going to be at least some of our focus this hour, and if you've got questions about it or insights to share, our guest is the Bonner Lowry Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences at the University of Virginia. He's also lead researcher on the Children Who Claim to Remember Previous Lives project at UVA's Division of Perceptual Studies. His newest book is titled Return to Life, Dr. Jim Tucker. Great to see you back in the Insight studio.
Well, thanks very much, Tom, for having me back.
So I'm curious, Jim, is it now your belief that there is such a thing as reincarnation?
Well, I have reached the point where I think we can say that we have good evidence that some young children do have memories of a life from the past. And if you accept that evidence, then you're left with trying to explain that. Reincarnation is not the only explanation, even if you accept the cases, but for a child to have memories from a life in the past, certainly that would be the most obvious thing, that child's remembering something he experienced. But there could be other paranormal ways of obtaining information. Somehow he had access to this material but hadn't actually lived it before. So those are the kinds of things people in my field actually debate what it means. But I do think the evidence is there, if people are open to considering it, to say that some young children do have memories from a past life.
Well, we'll consider the evidence and some of the stories that you tell in this new book in just a few moments, Jim Tucker. But what you've just said sounds to me like some movement from where you were when you were here 5 years ago after your first book was published, when you seemed to be a little bit more hesitant to say there's something paranormal going on.
Yeah. And that first book was a review of what's now 50 years of work, but much of that was done by other people, and in particular my mentor, Ian Stevenson. Now that I've been in the field longer and seen some of the cases myself, particularly American ones, which I focused on, yes, I would say I've become persuaded that we can go a little further and say that the evidence is pretty darn solid.
So there's a little boy named Ryan and a little boy named James Leninger. I don't think Ryan's last name gets used in the book. Both of these are sort of blow your socks off cases if somebody is trusting that the author of this book, Return to Life, is reporting what actually happened. Since you're a quite highly regarded scientist, many people do trust. But which of those two, Ryan or James, should we go to first?
Well, why don't we start with James? James Leininger is a young man in Louisiana, son of Christian parents. And when he was 2, he started having horrific nightmares of a plane crash. He was having these several times a week where he would be kicking his legs up, screaming, airplane crash on fire, little man can't get out.
And that's what he was saying.
That's what he was saying, thrashing about. Apparently it was horrific to watch. And during the day, he started saying that these dreams were memories that he had from his last life, how he had been a pilot who had flown off of a boat, and his father asked him the name of the boat, and he said Natoma. And he said that he'd been shot down by the Japanese. He'd been killed at Iwo Jima, that he flew a plane called a Corsair, and they would ask him his name, and he'd always just say me or James, which they didn't make anything of at the time. And then one time they asked him who else was there with him, and he said Jack Larson. So we have documentation of all of these things I've just said, documentation that was made before anyone had any idea if there was such a pilot or not.
Documentation that the little boy said these things and claimed these memories.
Exactly. Documentation for things like the words Natoma and the words Jack Larson and also how the plane had crashed. His father, who was quite opposed to the idea of reincarnation, said he initially started investigating these statements to show that there was nothing to them. Eventually, it became a real labor of love for him, and he spent several years and eventually determined that, in fact, there had been an escort carrier in World War II called the USS Natoma Bay, and, in fact, it had been involved in the Iwo Jima operation. At Iwo Jima, it only lost one pilot, so that means if James was remembering a life, it had to be that one. What he found out was this pilot was named James Houston, and Houston had, in fact, flown a Corsair. He was flying a different kind of plane when he was killed, but he had been a test pilot for the Corsair. He had been killed at Iwo Jima by the Japanese, as James had said. The way that the crash happened, James had said that he had been hit in the engine, the plane had burst into flames, crashed in the water, quickly sank. That's exactly what happened with Houston's plane. And on the day of the crash, the pilot of the plane next to his was named Jack Larson, the name that James Leininger had given. So this is one where the little boy made some very specific statements of a life from someone far away and long ago. This pilot was from Pennsylvania, had no connection whatsoever to anyone around James, and he had been killed 60 years before, and yet all the details that James both told of and experienced in his nightmares all matched with this man's life.
And these were actually, although the nightmares that you mentioned started when James Leininger was about 2 years old, the stories that he told came out over a couple of year period?
Yes, although the main facts that I've given you, those were all out by the time he was 2.5. And then he elaborated on a lot of stuff, and altogether, by our count, he made 58 statements about the past life. 42 of them were verified to be accurate for James Houston, and then the others could not be verified one way or the other. But yeah, he made a lot of statements that the story continued to unspool as the years went on. But the key facts of the case actually came out very early.
How difficult was it to verify the facts? I understand, for example, that the boat, the USS Natoma Bay, was not at all well known, and it took a long time to locate the fact that such a ship had even existed.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a nondescript escort carrier. These days, of course, with the internet, you can find just about anything you look for. And the dad, after a long internet search, did find the Natoma Bay, and he printed out what he found. And the footer of his printout had the date that he printed it out. So we actually know when James was 28 months old, he had given the word Natoma, because there's that printout on the USS Natoma Bay.
How do you approach this kind of story? What was your role in verifying what was going on here or trying to come to any conclusions about what was going on here?
Yeah, this was one that I got to late. And in fact, as I said, James's dad did the bulk of the research. I spent a weekend talking with the family when James was 12. But in that case, there are a couple of parts that I play. One is to verify that what the child said actually matches with the past life person. And again, James's dad did all the work for him, but I've got the records now that he had collected. But the other part of it, which is equally as important, really, is looking at the documentation of when he said it. And in this case, we know that the Houston, the pilot, was not identified until James was nearly 5 years old. But we actually have, the Leiningers did a TV interview for ABC News when the pilot was not identified, but they're just talking about all these strange things their child was saying and doing. The interview actually never even aired, but because I was also interviewed for the program, I got a copy from ABC News of it, and that's now documentation, video documentation of a lot of these details that existed before Houston was identified.
Dr. Jim Tucker, anybody just listening to the sound of your voice right now, if they have not yet read your book and seen the further detail and the notes at the end of the book, especially if they're skeptical, are likely to be saying to themselves, well, you know, the parents got the information somehow. They coached their little boy to say these things. They wanted some fame and celebrity, and maybe they thought they could make some money off of this thing. Why would a respectable scientist believe any of this when obviously it's all bunk?
Well, I think with that particular scenario, if the parents were looking for fame, they would have had the whole story together when they did that interview with ABC News. But in fact, they didn't. They could only say, our child is talking about being a pilot in World War II, but we don't know if he's really remembering an actual pilot or not. So what you're left with is this scenario where they had this multi-year magnificent fraud for no apparent purpose, and they passed up a golden opportunity to share it with the world. So to my way of thinking, that's really not very plausible. And what I would say to skeptics about this case is, read the chapter in my book and then tell me how you would explain it, because it really is one that I think challenges any sort of ordinary explanation.
But tell us more about your role here. I mean, you interview the child, even if it's several years after the original reports. You interview the parents. You oftentimes interview people who know the family. What are you looking for? What are you gauging? What kinds of judgments are you making along the way?
Well, certainly I'm assessing the veracity of the people involved, and in this case, the parents and the boy. But beyond that, yes, I'm trying to get corroborating testimony. So in this case, I interviewed James's aunt, who had spent a lot of time with the family when he was young. I also interviewed the pilot's sister, who was still alive. She was 91 at the time, but I interviewed her as well. And I reviewed all of the records, in this case, that James's dad had collected, to see if, in fact, the match that he was claiming really was a match. And again, reviewing the documentation, I came away quite impressed. I've certainly had cases where they sounded great at the outset, but as I learned more about it, I could see the weaknesses of the case. This one, the more I delved in, actually it got stronger, because I saw what irrefutable documentation there was of what James had said before the pilot was identified.
Jim Tucker is a researcher at the University of Virginia's Division of Perceptual Studies. He heads up that center's investigations into children who claim to remember past lives. His newest book is titled Return to Life: Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. So for you listening somewhere, someone listening to this conversation, I'm sure, once had firm beliefs on the topic of reincarnation, but at some point, those beliefs changed. If you're that person and you'd be willing to tell us about that change for yourself, we'd love to hear from you at 888-967-2825. Easy to remember as 888-WMRA-TALK. Or you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. We've got a pause for a brief break, and I believe Lois in Harrisonburg is going to be our first call when we get back. Dr. Jim Tucker is a child psychiatrist. For a number of years, he had a clinical practice with offices both in Waynesboro and Fishersville, but since joining the faculty at the University of Virginia in the late 1990s, much of Dr. Tucker's focus has been on researching children who claim to have memories of previous lives. His first book about that research, published several years ago, was titled Life Before Life. His new book on more recent research is titled Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. Let's go next to Harrisonburg. Lois, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Dr. Tucker, please.
I had read Dr. Brian Weiss's book, Many Lives, Many Masters, and just as I was finishing it up, I glanced down at my, at that time, about three-year-old daughter who was playing on the floor, and she sat up straight and said, "I feel young again." And then she turned and looked at me and said, "Thank you for making me young again."
Well, that's an interesting story.
And Lois, how long ago was this?
Oh, she's 27 now, so it was a while ago.
So almost a quarter of a century ago. Apparently this really stuck with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I read Brian Weiss's book, and I was pretty convinced, but when she said that, I just was shocked.
And did she ever...
I was converted, if not.
Did she ever elaborate at all, or was...
No,
that was
I mean, she was pretty little kid. I mean, 2 to 3. I don't remember exactly how old, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah,
she did say something once. She said older things on occasion that you just wouldn't expect a little kid to say. But she did say once, "You're my favorite mother." And I thought, well, that's just the kind of thing kids say. But then after she said that other thing, I got to thinking, well, maybe she really meant it.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of cases where the child just says one or two things, and they can be pretty curious. Like we had one from Charlottesville, actually, where mom's riding down the road one day, and the kid pipes up from the back seat, "In my last life, I drove a big truck." And that was the only thing he ever said about it. So with your case and with that one, yeah, it's really interesting. It's curious. It's hard to know what to make of it. But those occur in this context where we have some kids who then say a whole lot about it. So it's certainly reason to take what these kids say seriously.
Lois, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. On our Facebook page, we have this in from Carolyn, Dr. Tucker, who says, "Fascinating topic. Any thoughts about past life experiences causing childhood phobias? I had an odd fear of whales when I was about 5 years old. Certainly, I'd had no experience with whales, so it never made any sense."
Well, that's a good question. And in fact, we have found, first of all, that when the kids talk about a past life, 70% of them ended by unnatural means, meaning murder, suicide, accident, combat, things like that. In those cases, over 35% of those children will show phobias toward the mode of death. So, for instance, there's a little girl who, from the time she was born, basically, she hated being in water. It would take three adults to hold her down to give her a bath when she was an infant. And then when she got old enough to talk, talked about the life of a little girl in a nearby village who had drowned in an accident. So those are certainly things that we hear about a lot. Now, the tricky part is doing the reverse of that. We know that a lot of these children who remember past lives show phobias, but does that mean that a lot of kids with phobias are recalling having sort of behavioral memories of a past life? And it's hard to know. Phobias are certainly something that we have never gotten a full understanding of. Some of them can occur after trauma, but like this example of where someone, for some reason, is afraid of whales, we don't know where those came from. And it is certainly worth speculating where it could be tied in with sort of some unconscious memories or fears that are still there from a past life.
One of the things that you've pointed out any number of times in public presentations, Dr. Jim Tucker, is despite the thousands of cases that you and your colleagues at the Division of Perceptual Studies at the University of Virginia have examined around the world over about a 50-year period, you don't give much credence to so-called past life regression or hypnotic techniques for people getting in touch with past life memories.
Well, that's right. And the caller mentioned Brian Weiss, who's one of the leading proponents of that. And he's a Yale-trained psychiatrist, and I'm sure a reasonable person in many ways. But we've always been concerned about hypnotic regression because hypnosis is such an unreliable tool, even for memories in this life. Unreliable in the sense that you can get amazing hits, like recalling license plate numbers at crime scenes or whatever. But then you get a lot of times where the mind essentially fills in the blanks with simply fantasy material. And then it's very hard for the person to tell if it was a fantasy or a memory. When you're talking about past lives, often ones which are completely unverifiable, then there's reason to be very skeptical about it. And often people, some of them are recalling being famous people, Cleopatra or whatever, where they seem sort of silly. But many of them don't go that far. But even so, there can be historical inaccuracies or a lot of reasons to question them. Having said all that, occasionally there will be a report of a hypnotic regression case that is impressive and does include verifiable details, but it's a tiny, tiny number among the huge volume of cases out there.
One of the cases that you go into in this newest book of yours, Jim Tucker, Return to Life, is a little boy in Oklahoma. If I'm recalling correctly, his mom's name was Cindy. She was a deputy clerk who said that she was brought up Baptist. His father was a police officer and a son of a very conservative Christian minister. The boy's name was Ryan, and he thought he had a connection to Hollywood and movies, which is going to give people pause.
Well, that's right. All of that started out in a letter that Cindy wrote to me. He had talked a lot about a life in Hollywood and had cried about it. And one day—
This is Ryan.
Ryan, yes.
Who was about how old was he?
He was five at the time.
Okay.
And one day he pointed to a picture from an old movie, pointed at one man and said, "Hey, that's George. We made a movie together." And then pointed at another guy and said, "And that's me. I found me." Well, the first man he pointed to was George Raft, who was a movie star back in the day. But the other fellow he pointed to, it turned out, had no lines in the movie. It was a picture from an old movie called Night After Night. And his mom wrote to me to see if
And this was a picture in a book. That
yeah,
just
a picture in a book. That's right.
Looking through.
Yeah, well, his mom had gotten some books from old Hollywood to see if he would recognize landmarks, which would stir more specific things that he could process, because he's very sad and upset about it, but it was hard to get a handle on it.
In this movie, not particularly well-known, Night After Night, was from the early 1930s?
1930s, yes. It may have been late 30s, but yes, in the 1930s. And is most notable for the fact that the first movie that Mae West was ever in, she had a very small part. But yes, I mean, it's a very nondescript movie.
So Ryan's not claiming to be a famous movie actor. He's pointing at a picture that he claims was himself in a previous life as an unknown character, in essence, an extra in this film.
Exactly. So she writes that to me, and then, I mean, from my office in Charlottesville, there's not a whole lot I can do to identify this no-name extra with no lines. But it did start the process, and eventually, through the help of a Hollywood archivist, we were able to identify that fella, but it took quite some time. And meanwhile, Cindy and I get this email correspondence going where she's emailing me sometimes on a daily basis with all these details that Ryan is giving about his life. And it sounded like quite a life. He described dancing in New York and then going to Hollywood where he was in the movies, and then he worked for an agency. He said how he had seen the world from big boats and how he had a big house and a swimming pool. All of this sounded quite unlikely to me for an extra with no lines in a movie. But what we found out was this man was a fellow named Marty Martin, and he had led that life. He had danced on Broadway. Then he had gone to Hollywood, where he worked in the movies, both as an actor as well as a dance choreographer kind of person.
And before you proceed, let me make sure I'm tracking. Would the Hollywood archivist getting a hold of the picture that you sent them and trying to identify who this unnamed actor in this little-known movie was, that's when you first came up with the name for this person, Marty?
Marty Martin.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So before we had the name, we had all the details that Ryan had given. And she went to this film library and went through all the materials of Night After Night and happened to find one picture where this guy was identified. So Marty Martin had danced on Broadway, then went out to Hollywood, worked in the movies for a while, then started a successful talent agency. He went to Europe on the Queen Mary, so he saw the world on big boats. And he did have a big house with a swimming pool. Ryan had said that the street name had either the word rock or mount in it, and Marty Martin lived on Roxbury. So again, it's a case where a young child recalled specifics, including names, from someone, in this case, had died 50 years before. Marty Martin died in 1964. And altogether, Ryan made actually a couple of hundred statements, but most of them were little details that we couldn't verify. But we were able to interview Marty Martin's daughter. And that, along with public records, we were able to determine that, in fact, 54 of the statements that Ryan made were, in fact, correct for Marty Martin.
Jim Tucker is a researcher at the University of Virginia's Division of Perceptual Studies. He heads up that center's investigations into children who claim to remember past lives. Dr. Tucker's newest book is titled Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives. Dr. Tucker, in the story that you've just told us, of a little boy from a family that their Christian belief system goes against the very idea of reincarnation, coming up with very specific detail about an individual that it took months and months of research to even determine that that individual existed, let alone to find out that some of the information that the boy was saying proved correct. How do you explain that as happening? I mean, you said at the beginning of the hour that you're more willing perhaps than ever to consider reincarnation as valid, but you also think there might be other explanations.
Well, I think we can say in this case that Ryan did not overhear this information. The same with James Lineker. I mean, these are very obscure people, so we can rule that out. And again, I think we can rule out that his parents perpetuated some sort of fraud based on who they were and how the case progressed. It just wouldn't have made any sense because a lot of the information we were only able to verify by interviewing Marty Martin's daughter, and obviously his parents hadn't done that. So what you're left with is this young child who had information from somebody's life from 50 years before. If you don't want to go far enough to say that he had lived that life before, you can wonder, did he get that information through psychic ability? And Ryan, in this case, this is, of course, another huge controversial area, but he has shown some apparent psychic abilities as well, mainly related to information about family members and things that happened to them or would happen to them. So, for instance, he told his grandmother that she was going to get chicken pox, and 2 weeks later she got shingles, which, of course, is caused by the virus that causes chicken pox. And there were a number of incidents like that. So that raises the question of whether he obtained that information, perhaps partly by seeing the picture, and it established some sort of psychic connection to Marty Martin, and he obtained that information unconsciously. He thought that those were memories of his, but is it possible that it was actually information that he got through that way? Argument against that is that Ryan is the exception in that he seemed to show psychic abilities, because most of these children show no extraordinary abilities whatsoever, except that they have memories from somebody else's life.
You're a scientist. You work for a highly regarded medical school. Your degrees and training are both at the University of North Carolina and at UVA. And yet you seem to be making room for paranormal possibilities that give many scientists the shudders. How do you reconcile that?
Well, I think as far as parapsychology goes, there is a lot more research, well-done research, and data available than most scientists have any idea. I mean, there are decades and decades of work that stand up to scrutiny very closely. I think beyond that, I continue to approach each case as an open question, and continue to approach each case with, I think, a scientific outlook. With Ryan and with James Leininger, I didn't accept anything that they said without verifying it. So that meant making phone calls or getting materials or whatever to verify what had happened. So yes, we're in areas that are out of the mainstream, but I hope that I'm doing it in a careful, thoughtful way that suggests maybe more people should take a look at it.
Next to Lou Ray, Leah, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for the author of Return to Life, Dr. Jim Tucker, please.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Dr. Tucker, I have a question about Ryan. I'm wondering if you ever took the time to introduce him to Mr. Martin's daughter.
Yes, we did have that meeting, and he seemed very uncomfortable during it. She was perfectly pleasant with him, but he was very uncomfortable. What he said afterwards was that, well, before we met, initially he thought that people were lying to him to say that she had gotten so old, because he remembered her as a little girl. She was only 8 when Marty Martin died. So he was very skeptical at first, but eventually after he did meet her, he said that he felt her energy had changed, that she was not the way that he remembered her, and said that that made him very uncomfortable. It's hard to know. I mean, with the meeting, there are a lot of people looking at him. There are other reasons to be uncomfortable, but that was the explanation that he gave.
Leah, thanks so much for your call. I'm sorry we're going to hit the break, but go ahead and ask your question. No, go ahead and ask your question, and we'll try and answer it when we get back.
Sure. Did meeting her bring up more memories for him?
Okay. We'll look for an answer when we get back with Dr. Jim Tucker in just a bit more than 1 minute. Leah, thanks again. So I'm curious, have you who are listening given much thought to the topic of reincarnation before? Do you think this is an appropriate subject to attempt to be studying scientifically? If you were involved in such a study, what questions would you most be trying to get answered? Our guest, Dr. Jim Tucker, author of the new book, Return to Life. Leah's parting question before we left the last segment, Jim, was there anything as a result of little Ryan having met this elderly woman that supposedly was his daughter from a previous life?
Yes, and to be fair to her, she wasn't elderly, but she was solidly middle-aged anyway.
Well, it's elderly to a 5-year-old boy.
Yeah, well, that's true. His statements have started to fade anyway, and this is something that we see in most of the cases where the children may talk a huge amount, but it's for usually a fairly short time period, and by the time the kids are 6, 7, or 8, they normally stop completely. And that has proven to be the case for Ryan, too. But the other part of it, and this is true for Ryan and with a number of other cases, when the child does visit the previous place and meet what's considered the previous family, often that seems to be quite helpful and enables them to help move on more, partly because they see that their claims have been verified. They see that there is this place and there these people are there. But they also see these people have gone on with their lives and that the past life really is in the past. And that seems to help them get more fully wrapped up in the current life and just to let those things go.
Next to Charlottesville, Peter, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Dr. Jim Tucker, please.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One is whether any of these cases involve a child who is speaking a language other than English. And secondly, whether any cases involve a future life, that is, a case that goes against the arrow of time.
Well, as far as the language part goes, I'm assuming you're asking, do any of the kids speak a language they haven't learned? We've studied cases all over the world, so there have been many, many languages involved. There have only been a very, very small number of cases where the child spoke a language that was not the native tongue. And that's partly, at least, because most of the children recall a life in the same country. But beyond that, they would also, if they recall life in another place, someone around them would have to know that they were actually speaking another language. So to make a long story short, those cases are extremely unusual. With the second part,
I think you do mention such a case, though, or at least a difference in dialect somewhere in Southeast Asia in this book. I don't recall the specific names, but was it in Burma or Thailand?
Well, in India, yes, there have been a couple of cases where the children started speaking Bengali, and they were not from that area of India. So it didn't look like they had had the opportunity to learn it. So, yeah, those cases are there, but again, it's a small number. Now, when that happens, obviously, it's quite impressive.
And then Peter's other question was about?
Was about future lives. And the short answer is no, although with a lot of these, sometimes the kids may say a lot, but we're not able to verify that it actually matches somebody who lived and died. So it's possible that they were recalling a life. I mean, it's at least in some ways theoretically possible that they're recalling a life from the future. We have not had any talk about flying cars or anything where it's clearly from the future. But in some cases, it's hard to say with certainty.
Peter, thanks so much for your call. Dr. Jim Tucker, how is your research funded?
It's funded through endowments that we have from gifts and bequests that a number of people have made.
So there are no tax dollars going into this research?
That's right. People don't need to be outraged that their tax money is being wasted on this crazy work.
But lots of people are outraged. I mean, in the 6 or 7 months since your new book was released, there have been any number of high-profile stories about it, interviews that you've done, including with NPR, The Atlantic Monthly, UVA Magazine. And in looking at some of those, I was fascinated in looking at the comments, which seem to mirror what we get here at Virginia Insight whenever we do anything that touches on research in areas that might be called paranormal, where there are some people who absolutely love the fact that we've done that, and there are people who are absolutely outraged. And some of the comments can be really, really nasty. And you certainly have gotten plenty of those posted on some of these different websites in response to The Atlantic Magazine or UVA Magazine or NPR. How do you explain that people have such passionate reaction, both positive and negative, when they hear of this kind of research?
Well, I think anything that challenges a fundamental way that we view the world is something that it's hard for people to accept. And we all have areas like that. I mean, frankly, when I hear about UFO research or something like that, I'm a little skeptical myself.
There's a difference between being a little skeptical and going on a rant about what a worthless human being, anybody who did this kind of thing and tried to perpetuate the kind of fraud that Jim Tucker is trying to perpetuate, would do.
Yeah, so it's probably just as well that I don't read the comment pages. But, you know, the internet, frankly, tends to kind of bring out the worst in people about any topic. There's plenty of outrage to express on either side. Clearly, this is something that bothers people. And if it bothers you enough, I would say just ignore it. But I feel comfortable that the approach that we're taking with this work is one that is reasonable, even if the area is something that people are not used to seeing investigated.
There's a famous quote that I think was attributed to your predecessor, the founder of the Division of Perceptual Studies at UVA, Ian Stevenson, about people holding on to certain beliefs or being unwilling to consider evidence. And I think the quote was, the wish not to believe can influence as strongly as the wish to believe. Do I have that correctly?
To be honest with you, I don't remember if Ian said that or not, but he certainly may have, because it's certainly true. People can have their blinders up for all kinds of things, and we go for the sort of the middle ground. It's important not to just, in our work, not to just accept things on faith. On the other hand, it's important not to reject something just because it conflicts with what we're used to hearing.
Jim Tucker is a medical doctor. He is the Bonner Lowry Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences at the University of Virginia. His newest book is titled Return to Life. We've got a few more minutes to take calls if you want to talk to him. Number is easy to remember as 888-WMRA-TALK. Deb in Woodstock, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please. Deb, are you still there? Well, I think maybe we have lost Deb. So let's go to something I didn't know we were going to have time for. But some of the children, I understand, Dr. Jim Tucker, talk about what they experienced between lives. And one of them was James, who you discussed earlier in the hour, who remembered dying in a plane crash during World War II. And you have just one paragraph here that I'd like you to read from page 85, and then maybe you can explain a little bit about what's going on.
Sure. When James turned 3, he got his first G.I. Joe and named it Billy. When he received his second one that Christmas, he named it Leon. 2 Christmases later, when he was 5 1/2, he received his 3rd, which he named Walter. These G.I. Joes were his buddies, and he took them everywhere. He played with them in the tub and slept with them at night. Andrea's sister remembers him naming one immediately after he unwrapped the package. His parents were particularly struck by the names Leon and Walter, as they aren't common ones for a young child to use. When they asked him why he chose those, he told them because that was who he met when he got to heaven.
Paraphrase what comes next, what you explain next in the book.
Yes, well, it turns out that there were 10 people from his squadron who had been killed before, from Houston's squadron, who had been killed before Houston was. The names of 3 of them were Billy, Leon, and Walter. And the hair color of each of them matched the hair color on the G.I. Joes that James had received. This led to discussion about heaven, and James had some fairly interesting things to say about it. And in fact, his mom asked him one day if God was a man or a woman, and James, little boy, said, neither. God is who you need him to be, which I thought was a pretty philosophical answer for a 4-year-old to make. And what we see is most of the kids don't say anything about time between lives, but about 20% will. And some describe earthly events like watching the funeral of the previous person. But then others will describe going to other realms like heaven. The American kids, like James, may say heaven. And then some of them will talk about being led back to their new set of parents, or in Ryan's case, of witnessing things that his parents did, or in James's case, too. James talked about picking out his parents when he saw them eating on the beach at a big pink hotel in Hawaii. And it turned out that his parents had taken a trip to Hawaii and eaten on the beach the last night of their trip there, where they stayed in a big pink hotel. And this was when they began trying to conceive. They didn't actually get pregnant on the trip. It was a couple months later, but that was when the intent began. And then years later, James seemed to somehow have known about it.
Next, to Mount Crawford, Ellie, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for psychiatrist and author Jim Tucker, please.
Hi there. When I hear stories like this, it's very exciting to me because although I don't subscribe to any particular religion, I very much believe in God, and I wondered if you feel that your studies and your work has brought you closer in your spiritual life, or if you believe in God, and if you have children, if they have any of these powers as well.
Well, that's an interesting area. I will say that this work has persuaded me that there is more than just the physical universe, that I do think there is this realm of consciousness that is important and is separate from purely physical reality. As far as my particular religious beliefs or spiritual beliefs, that gets a little complicated, but I do explore some of those at the end of my book as far as trying to piece together what I think the afterlife might involve. As far as my kids, yes, I do have kids, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, but they were too old by the time I got into this work to ask them about their past lives. So no, none of them ever said anything like this. And frankly, I'm not sure kids are necessarily always better off even remembering them. So maybe we shouldn't ask, but it certainly would have been very tempting to do if my kids had been younger.
Ellie, thanks so much for your call. You, in this book, Jim Tucker, Return to Life, Extraordinary Cases of Children Who Remember Past Lives, not only recount a number of the cases that you've investigated in recent years, but you also delve into scientific study or attempt to study consciousness and quantum mechanics. Tell us about that. To the degree that you can in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, well, hard to sum up quantum theory in 30 seconds, that's for sure. But one thing that is a reasonable interpretation of the quantum work, and this is just sort of standard quantum theory, is that measurement or observation is necessary for events on the quantum level, meaning the smallest units of the universe, for events on the quantum level to happen, and that before there's observation, there are just potentials, and that observation is what is key. It's not too many steps beyond that to consider the possibility that the physical universe, if it essentially grows out of observation, that it grows out of consciousness, that, you know, the standard physical science view of consciousness is that it's simply the result of the brain. But it may, in fact, if you look at quantum theory, it may, in fact, be the case that the physical world is the result of consciousness, not that consciousness is the result of the physical world.
Am I misreading your book, getting the impression that you've come to the belief that what you've just said is the case, that you believe now that consciousness exists outside the body?
I do. I believe that consciousness exists separate from the physical universe, not just the body. And, you know, there are renowned scientist, much more renowned than me, who have said similar things, and including recently a review in our column in Nature, where a physicist from Johns Hopkins said the universe is entirely mental. So those ideas are certainly out there.
So I'm really looking forward to your next visit and your next book. Our guest has been Dr. Jim Tucker, child psychiatrist, associate professor of psychiatry at the University of Virginia, as well as researcher at UVA's Division of Perceptual Studies. Dr. Tucker's newest book is titled Return to Life. Jim, thank you so very much for making time for us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Podcasts of this program are available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about Dr. Tucker and the work that he is doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.